Welcome to the Lucra Podcast, where we're redefining wealth from the inside out. I'm your host, Mindy Kinnis, inviting you into real conversations on money, mindset, and meaning. Because true prosperity isn't just about the cash. It's about the life you're creating. Please share and enjoy. All right, my friends, welcome back to another awesome show. I am joined today by my friend, Dr. Sanjay Bodraj, and I am stoked for this conversation because he is one, a cardiologist, but more interestingly, he is one of just a handful of people in the United States that isn't just a cardiologist, but he's also a functional cardiologist. In other words, functional medicine. So this is going to be an awesome conversation. Sanjay, thank you so much for joining me today.
Mindy, thanks so much. It's really an honor and you know, what a fun time we're going to have.
We've already been having a fun time off camera, but let's get into this stuff. Yeah. Now, you mentioned something to me before we started this recording. You said I spent the first beginning part of my career basically helping people get on medicine. Yeah. And now what you're doing is helping them get off of it. I would love to hear your origin story, your journey of that experience, and like what the heck is going on in this idea of like now we're totally switched in our mindset.
Yeah, like how does that happen,
right? Exactly.
Like, wake up and wonder, how did this happen, right? Like that old was it Men at Work song, you know, how did I get here? And it just seems like the most natural evolution of a career for me. So I grew up in an Indian household, and basically I was brainwashed from before I was born that I was going to be a physician, as a lot of medical families are. Both of my parents were doctors, and so it was never a question. Like, I had the blinders on from, you know, you asked me in first grade what I wanted to be, and it was a doctor of some sort, not necessarily a cardiologist. So that was always in the cards. And I loved it, honestly. Like, I was
good.
Fortunate people that, you know, I love science. I love humans. I love people. I like being useful. And so it really did a great job for me in terms of, you know, putting me in my zone of genius on a lot of different roles. And so I went through medical school and decided that cardiology was where I wanted to be. I always loved doing cardiac or doing procedures of any sort. Like, if there was ever like somebody needed stitches or something, I was always the first, you know, I was that kind of crazy med student that wanted to do it.
So volunteered.
Yeah, exactly. And so when it came to doing a career, you know, what I loved about cardiology was that I could do I could become what's called an interventional cardiologist. So I was the doctor that put stents in balloons and treated heart attack and did heart valves and all that stuff. So I loved the procedural aspect of it, but I also loved the people aspect of it. I loved clinic and I loved being part of people's lives and ushering them through some crazy times and just becoming almost like part of the family, right? I always say there's two cards, business cards you want before you need them. Number one is a criminal defense attorney because you don't want to have to go to the yellow pages. And number two is a cardiologist because you want to know the person who's taking care of your heart. It is a very sacred relationship. So,
and let me just pause you right there because I can't reemphasize what you just said any more clearly. A lot of my listeners will know of my recent experience with some cholesterol situations. And the fact that you and I had just recently met and I was able to reach out to you and be like, hey, like I could maybe use some help with this, probably was life-changing.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, when it comes to your heart, right? Like in the hierarchy of needs, health, I think is definitely one of them, but your heart is the organ that really keeps you alive, right? How do we know you're dead? Your heart stops working, right? Your brain can stop working and you can still be alive, right? And so I always took that trust that people put in very serious and very sacred. And I know how important it is. And I really enjoyed it. And for, you know, 15 or 20 years, I loved it. And then I started seeing a little bit of cracks, not necessarily in cardiology, but just in the conventional medicine system, was that, you know, we had repeat business, right? Like you know, Shark Tank, you watch Shark Tank and, you know, they'll be like, all right, well, what's your customer acquisition cost and what's your repeat order rate and all those things. And I was getting to that point in my career where people whose heart attacks I treated and we had them at, you know, great cholesterol levels and blood sugar and blood pressure and all the things that we could control were optimized. And yet they were still having second or third events. And I still there must be something we're missing here, right? Like there's something more than just these numbers. And in a really just kind of backwards way, I found functional medicine. Well, that backwards way was I started, I had like fitness ADD, I call it. So I'm always doing a different thing. And so I started out with triathlon and then did marathons, and I hate running, but it was for the mental.
Okay.
I know that you had Akshay Natavanti on here not that long ago.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of, I didn't quite cross Antarctica with a sled on my back, but I did things for mental kind of clarity and for focus. So I was doing triathlons, and then I got into CrossFit and Spartan races. And then somehow I landed on powerlifting. I know I look probably 6'6" on camera, but in real life I'm 5'6". And so one of the cool things that happened was the way that my femur lengths and my hip and my body, like the mechanics of my body, lent themselves really nicely to powerlifting. So I started doing competition powerlifting, and I had to supplement and all these things. And you have to be very cautious because in the powerlifting world, they drug test you. So I had to pee in a cup before competitions and things. So there was a specific supplement line that I found out. Well, if you have a medical license, you can sign up for a wholesale account and get half off. So the Indian genes kicked on, and I'm like, who doesn't love 50% off of supplements or whatever it was? And I was part of their email sequence, and this email came out about the functional medicine approach to hypertension. And at this point, I'd been a cardiologist for, I don't know, 10, 7, 10 years, something like that. And I'm like, teach me something I don't know, right?
Yeah.
Let's see what you got. Hold my beer, right? They taught me a lot about things I didn't know about the importance of magnesium and the importance of inflammation, the role of inflammation and hypertension, and the role of diet and lifestyle. And I thought, here I am, you know, Mr. Know-it-all or Dr. Know-it-all. I'm like, wow,
Right.
I really learned something new. And I think one of the most important things about being an entrepreneur, being a doctor, being a human is to maintain curiosity, right? And so rather than just writing this off as some sort of crazy thing, I thought, you know what, let me learn more about this. And that led me to the Institute of Functional Medicine, where I eventually got certified, and here I am. But what I love about what I do now as a cardiologist with a functional mindset is, you know, I still have that skill set of, you know, cholesterol management, looking at angiograms and all that stuff. But now I can actually give people kind of real diet interventions, real lifestyle interventions, so they can avoid having cardiovascular disease issues. Like I get people off of meds for hypertension, and I reverse insulin resistance. And I say, you know, as we were talking before, the best way to manage a heart attack is to manage never to get one in the first place. And now I think it's so relevant with metabolic syndrome and these metabolic disorders becoming so frequent. In fact, the University of Utah study, I think 2 or 3 years ago now, showed, I think it was like 2000, what, 22 or so, demonstrated 93% of Americans are metabolically imbalanced, right? So that's
Ugh.
crazy. So we have this rising tide. So, you know, who better than someone who like knows what heart disease smells like. Like I can tell you what coronary plaque smells like. And I was so in there. Who better than that than to usher people through
Wait,
diet?
what
It
does it smell like?
just it kind of it just has a really weird metallic smell. Again, like it.
Sounds like that's grossing me out just to think about it.
Well, you know, I've got pictures on my phone that I can show you, but I mean, you know, someone who is so intimately aware of the problem, right? You know, how can I help get people through? And so I started this online program a few years ago, and it's been amazing what I've seen. People who had like heart attacks annually have now, you know, I've got one guy who basically saw me every year for a cardiac event, has now been out of the cath lab, out of the angiography suite for 4 years because we
Wow.
changed his diet, changed his lifestyle. So it's really amazing the change that you can make without meds. And that's, you know, the drum that I beat now, as you mentioned, is for the first 15 years, I was putting people on more and more meds, and whatever God gives me on this back half of my career, I'm going to focus on getting people off meds when possible, right? Sometimes,
Yes.
but yeah.
So, what do you think it is about yourself that allowed you to have that open mind? Because I would say, I mean, huge props to you for being like, let me stay curious. Let me explore this other thing. Because a lot of allopathic doctors are like, nope, you're wrong. This is it. I went to med school. Like, I'm the one that knows. And that's the end of the story. So you clearly were very different.
Well, I mean, I don't know that I was different from the beginning. I kind of say if you took today's Sanjay and showed him, It took him back in time to 10 years ago.
Okay.
So I'd be like, did he fall off his bike? Did this guy have a traumatic brain injury? Was sitting here talking about deep breathing and the importance for a cardiovascular benefit? Like, come on, how long has he lived in California? But
Right.
I think part of it was being an interventional cardiologist. We're trained to have a mindset of how to fix things, right? So normally it's balloons, it's stents, it's procedures. But for me, that extended into whatever I could to do to take care of my patients. Like when you're a parent, right? Like, I've got three daughters, and it was a pretty
Triplets, by the way.
triplets, yeah. So pretty intense situation. I remember just, whatever it takes to get them to stop crying, or whatever it takes to get them to eat, like I will do it. If I have to, spin 3 times counterclockwise and 10 times clockwise, and that's going to take care of them, I'll do it, right? So I think that openness in my personal life, my family life, kind of bled into, so to speak, my career to say, hey, you know what? We don't have the right answers all the time. Yeah, we're really good at acute management, but again, if I've got someone's cholesterol at goal and their blood sugar at goal and their blood pressure at goal, what else is going on? There's something else happening. And I think it's really easy for conventional trained docs to be very arrogant, and to be dismissive of other areas, and I never really understood why, right? Because if it cures a patient or if it helps a patient, it works, right? And sometimes the simplest thing you can do is just listen. Like the power of presence is so important. And if I'm sitting here, looking at my screen and you're talking to me and I'm not even engaging with you as a human, you're not going to feel that connection, that closeness, right? And so, I guess, I don't know, maybe I'm a weirdo, but I always just
Well, I mean, if that's the case, like, that's
whatever it takes
awesome.
to get people across the finish line to health. That's what, as a healer, that's my prime directive. That's what I need to do.
Well, I think using that word speaks so prominently about that whole, like, your answer to that question, because a lot of doctors I don't really think of as healers,
Yeah. They're treaters,
unfortunately.
right? They're treaters, right? They'll treat numbers,
Correct.
but they're not really interested in reversing disease. And I remember the wise philosopher Chris Rock said this years ago in one of his comedy specials, where he's like, doctors haven't treated or haven't cured anything in years. And I remember I was in med school when that comedy special came out, and I was all pissed. But at him, like, what are you talking about? I'm a
Of course
med
we
school.
have.
I'm going to take on the world. And then, over time, I kind of saw the wisdom in what he had to say. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Like, all I do is treat numbers, but why does blood pressure exist? Why is cholesterol high, right? Why are thyroid issues so common? Why do people's bodies attack themselves and have autoimmune problems? Like,
Right.
there's something going on here. And yeah, it's great that we have all these antibody medicines and this, that, and the other to deal with this, but what's the underlying issue? Like, let's fix that, right? And what I've learned is that it's really low tech. You don't need antibodies against IL-6 to kind of do things. Sometimes all you need to do is get sugar out of your diet, or sleep more, or get your heart, get your do like breath work and do like things like heart math, and get your body and mind kind of more synced up. Like, that's literally all it takes sometimes to get to find that underlying cause.
Exactly. Thank you so much. What is one of your biggest pet peeves? So you mentioned how, like, the vast majority of Americans are metabolically unhealthy.
Yeah.
What is something from your perspective that is, like, maybe the most obvious thing that people could do better? Like, or what's a pet peeve of yours that you're like, gosh, like, why do these people keep doing whatever?
Well, I think that, number one, I think it's a lot of people don't know, right? Like,
True.
and so it may not be that they choose to do it. Like, for instance, like alcohol is something we choose to do, right? We choose to
Right.
drink. And now there's more and more information about the deleterious things that alcohol can do, and so that's a choice, just in the same way that smoking, like, used to be, considered healthy.
Right.
I have a magazine ad that said 5 out of 10 doctors prefer
Recommend.
this, yeah, recommend this brand of cigarettes or whatever. And there it wasn't so much that people were choosing to smoke, but it was that the information was being withheld, right? And now we know about tobacco and kind of all that stuff. And it's difficult to look back in time because we might not have had the research kind of consistency that we have currently. And so as a result, we made bad decisions. Like, I mean, if I think about the car seats that I grew up with, which weren't really even car seats, and now like I strap my kids into this bubble wrapped kind of airbag thing,
Totally.
like it's completely different. So you go with what you have at the time, but I think if there are a couple of health trends that I would shift, I think the number one thing would be to give agency back to patients, right? Give
Ah, hallelujah.
you the ability to understand that you are in the driver's seat. You control your health. The doctor has nothing to do with anything. And I remember saying this in my clinic all the time, is I see you for 15 minutes every 6 months, right? So
Yeah.
that means that for the other 179 days, 23 hours and 45 minutes, it's on you, right? And I think what happens in the way that the medical community has set itself up, the conventional community at least, is your health depends on me entirely, right? As the physician. So you have no control. You have no ability to do anything for yourself. You depend on me. It's like the worst gaslighting ever.
It's kind of like a religion.
It is
You
like,
know, like
and
they're the
in any
priests,
way, right?
and to
Like,
like get to God, you have to go through the priest.
yeah, I mean, that's a whole other discussion,
Well, yes.
but saying that doctors are the only way. And I think that the one thing that I really love doing, I really enjoy what I'm doing now, is kind of connecting micro outcomes to behavioral changes. So meaning like you'll see your weight change, by, X amount per day or whatever it may be based on what you're eating. You'll see your blood pressure improve based on now feeling less inflamed. You'll have less pain. Like the things that we care about, like you have less pain because now when you're eating healthy and giving your body the food that it needs, and it can regenerate and it can heal itself through sleep and mental relaxation and being in a parasympathetic dominant state and all these things that we'll talk about. Like the one thing I wish that people have was agency. So I get annoyed about the fact that patients think that doctors are the only route to health. The other thing that frustrates me so much, and we see it a lot with these GLP-1 meds, is people are either unaware or unwilling to change behavior because they think that a pill will fix it or an injection
Quick
will fix
fix, baby.
it.
Just give me that magic bullet.
Yeah, and I've been around long enough to have seen a couple generations of quick fix and put together the pieces after they're done, right? So I remember like when Fen-Phen came out, that was in the late 90s or early 80s, late 90s, somewhere in there. And it was touted that, oh yeah, the great drug, miracle drug, lose weight, do what you want, no side effects. And then 8 years later, people needed to get their heart valves replaced
Oh.
because the original trials were only done with like, 90-day outcomes or 1 year outcomes. It was affecting people's heart valves to where we had this epidemic of people needing heart surgery from weight loss. So what is the true cost of what we're doing? I call this the Jurassic Park problem, is that, pardon my French, but when you F with nature will F back with you, right?
Agreed.
And
Yes, I love
so
that.
we don't know all the things that these medications are going to do. And in fact, with like particularly the medication of the day right now seems to be these GLP-1 drugs, and they have so many beneficial, quote unquote, beneficial effects on brain health and this and that. But we don't know yet what the imbalances are, and people are so willing to jump in. I mean, it's crazy to me that the same people who were so concerned about getting a co and I'm not politicizing this at all, but people were so concerned about a COVID vaccine, right, because of limited data, but yet they're jumping into a GLP-1. Like the data is equally kind of crappy there, right? Like one jab versus another, let's keep our minds here, people, right?
That's
So
really interesting though, but it speaks to the American culture.
It speaks to the culture of do what I want and the doc will put me together, right? And I just get so nervous because, we don't know everything about where this thing works and, where this GLP-1, where these meds work. And now what we're seeing is they're now creating medicines to counteract the side effects of the medicines of the effects they're creating. So one of the big things that came out was that these medications can lead to a 40 to 60% loss of non-fat weight, meaning we thought it was all muscle, but you also see bone loss now is what we're seeing,
Oof.
right? And so now they are adding in additive medicines. There's a whole class of orphan drugs that they're bringing back to deal with maintaining muscle mass as you're losing this weight. So there's these anti-sarcopenia drugs that got resurrected to conjugate to put in with these GLP-1s and GIPs and all these meds now, so that to counteract the side effect that it itself is creating. And I'm like, man, like it's just the worst thing ever. We're giving you a drug to treat the side effect of a drug that we created. Like, let
Which
this
is
nonsense
crazy.
stop. Like, just just let's just eat the way that our bodies were supposed to. Let's live how we're supposed to. Let's get out and move, right? Let's be in the sunlight. Let's not be on our phones all the time and not multitask and give our bodies just rest, right? I don't know, over here in the corner, my dog is sitting here, and Ziggy is his name, and that guy sleeps like freaking 20 hours a day. He's living his life, you know what I mean? And that's like, he is the most parasympathetically driven being I know. And that's really where we're supposed to be. None of this, oh, it's 2 in the morning, I'm awake, let me check my email and hit my head with blue light, and now that affects my melatonin and my sleep, kind of nonsense that we deal with. So number one, giving people agency back. Number two, kind of getting away from this pill for every ill mentality that has crept in. And number three, really helping people understand and educating people about kind of the consequences of these diet and lifestyles and things that we have. I think I made up number three, but sounds like a good bullet point.
I am all for it. Now, my thought is that probably because you are one of just a handful of cardiologists that are trained in functional medicine as well in the US, a lot of people may not have the opportunity to sit and chat, with like a cardiologist with your perspective. So one of the things that I found interesting about our previous conversation is you were telling me briefly about how keto, can be great for some people, but like really, really not great for other people. And I wondered if, that could be one example, if you could give like maybe a couple ideas or tips to people that maybe already have some sort of cardiac situation going on or whatever. Like, what are, because like I didn't know that. Like, you hear, oh, keto, it's good for everybody. Just go high fat, high protein and then low carb. Great. Well, as we clearly found out, like that's not great for me. So, what are other things that like people might not know?
So, number one, because there's probably so many people in keto or whatever it may be, I never recommend all or nothing diets. Like,
Which
there's
is so smart. Like, hello, let's just balance these things.
we were not meant to just eat one thing, right? It's
Right.
not just meat, it's not just fruits and vegetables, it's a healthy balance in between. And if you look at the way our body processes food and how the microbiome and the bacteria that live in our gut thrive, it's not just all one or another. You need a balance of everything, right? That's really how we were designed. So, I got people mad at me because I'm not necessarily pro-vegan. I think that the majority of the benefit of being vegan happens in the first 3 to 6 months by taking ultra-processed foods out of your diet. But of course, you can have unhealthy vegan as well. Potato chips are vegan, corn
Right.
potatoes, right? So, if it's done correctly and intentionally, that's okay. On the flip side, I don't think like carnivore diets are great either. And so the nuance in this is something called nutrigenomics, where our genes affect how our body interacts with food and our environment and all of these things. And so diet is not a one size fits all phenomenon. And you've seen this too, where at your church or your gym or at work or whatever, oh, look at Steve went on this keto diet, he lost 40 pounds, and Joe went on that diet and gained 10 pounds in a
Right.
day.
What happened to Joe?
Our bodies are all unique and different, and part of that has to do with ancestry and kind of what we're designed to eat. Years ago, there was this book called The Blood Type Diet, which I think was the first one that really kind of opened my eyes to not everybody responds the same way. Now, I don't know specifically about the science of that, but at least it kind of drew attention to some sort of a genetic thing that may be related to why some people do better than others. And now that's burgeoned into this field called nutrigenomics. So you can go get your genome sequenced and now kind of have a better understanding of your ability to digest meat and what your enzymes are like, and which vegetables might be better or worse for you or whatever. So I think we're seeing a lot of that in the precision medicine space. But when we look at kind of general universals, as you were asking for, I think there's a couple of things. Number one, food should not have more than one ingredient. Like broccoli is made out of broccoli, right? Like beef is made out
Right.
of beef, right? Like, the second you need a chemistry class
To
to
read the label.
read the label, right? That's a problem. And so, and food should spoil, right? Like, it's a hashtag unpopular opinion, but if you have something that has a shelf life of 6 to 6 months to a year.
Like, what is it exactly?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've all seen these Instagram posts or, social media posts of like a burger, a hamburger from a fast food place that was left out for like 10 years, and
Still looks great.
the bread doesn't even look moldy, and the meat
Right.
still looks meaty, and kind of all that stuff. And And you know, I mentioned my dog in the background. He's a great test for this because he is not raised on processed food at all. So if you give him a Cheeto or a carrot, he'll just kind of look at the Cheeto and be like, "What the heck is this thing? Like this, this is like some weird thing." And he'll go for the carrot, you know. And so that's what that's the level that we need to have is, you know, getting back to food as just a thing. I think understanding how profound the addiction to sugar has become. And that's another one, like a universal, and really kind of breaking that sugar. I'm not saying it's easy by any stretch of the imagination, just like not, you know, stopping drinking is not easy or stopping smoking is not easy. But, you know, when you're eating sugar and you know, when you're eating these ultra processed foods, they're hitting the same behavior reward centers in your brain as like heroin does, right? So it is a deep connection, right? And so that's definitely something. And then three, understanding how your lifestyle, in the sense of if you're not sleeping well, if you're running around, if you're wired and tired, how that drives, just from a biological standpoint, hormones that make you make bad decisions. So it's not that you're choosing this, but just like in the same way that, you know, when you're a teenager and your hormones are raging and you can't stop thinking about, you know, sex or whatever it is, like that's a biological urge, right? Like there's nothing that you can do, right? But I mean, I'm not saying you act on it all the time, but it's a very deep thing, right? And similarly, like thinking your way out of a period, like you can't like think your way out of an FSH, LSH surge to ovulate and, you know, and think your estrogen. Like these are deeply rooted things in our body that are built in. So when we talk about like the success and failure of diets, I think what happens a lot of times is people don't take into account kind of easing their hormones and optimizing that, you know, and we're talking about hormones like leptin and ghrelin and these hormones now associated with bioenergetics, you know, really taking those into account as part of any plan to get better. Because what if you don't do that, what happens is you get people on these yo-yo diets. I'm going to count every calorie and I'm going to not eat. I'm going to deprive myself. Yeah, you know what? Calories in, calories out. I don't agree with it completely, but at a thermodynamic level, yeah, it makes sense. If you eat less calories than you push out, you're going to lose weight. I'm not saying it's right, but it's just a chemistry fact. But there's so much more nuance involved. And we have to take that into account.
Yes, thank you for that. I'm like cheering over here, just like, yes, preach. I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about your journey some more.
Oh, yeah.
With this idea that a lot of people listening are seeking, like, what is my life purpose? How can I gain freedom? I talk a lot about freedom. It's like my highest value as an entrepreneur, as a coach, whatever. You came from this very kind of rigid experience of becoming a cardiologist and have now ventured out into this much more expansive perspective. How does that relate to what you are here to do and the legacy that you want to leave?
Yeah, so in Hinduism we call it dharma, is that your purpose in life is to share your purpose in life, right? So finding out what that is. And whenever I had med students or high school students come to me, you know, I had a bunch of like motivated kids that thought they wanted to be doctors rotate with me through the summers and things. And the first thing I would always talk to them about is ikigai, right? That Japanese
Yes,
kind of
we are
theory
so
of
on the same page with
what
this.
you love, what you're good at, what you can get paid for, what the world needs, right? I mean, I think figuring out what that circle is and that center spot becomes hugely important for you, right? To really feel like you're in that flow state, that life is easy, right? And so I think that's really important. And then also realizing that chapter one is not going to look like chapter three. I think that was the hardest thing for me, was realizing that, you know what, you can evolve your career in different ways. Like if you think about, I always think about Tom Cruise as a very prolific actor, right? You look at the different roles that yeah, he came back as Maverick or whatever, but like, you know, he was kind of changing roles over time. Or you look at Brad Pitt or Tom Hanks or, you know, any of these, you know, like actors that, you know, they take roles that change over time. So you're not always just typecast in one thing, unless you're really good at, like, Vince Vaughn always plays the same character in every movie he's in, but he's awesome at it, right? Like, but it's okay to change with time, right? And I think you just have to have that mental kind of stubbornness, I guess, particularly to be an entrepreneur, to say, you know what, like, I know what drives me, right? And I know that for the first 15 years or so of my career, like being an interventional cardiologist drove me. I identified with it and whatnot. And then I had that kind of fracture in my soul of once I got exposed to functional medicine, realizing, you know what, that's something that I really want to do. Realized that I couldn't be both. I think because that led me to burnout pretty quickly, where I was trying to be two things at once. And then I just had this realization, you know, what do I really want to do? What does legacy look like for me, right? And so I
Yeah.
say midlife crisis is one of creating legacy. It's not about sports cars and things. And I think for most people, it is, you know, it is one of creating legacy. And for me, it was looking at new pro or old problems in new ways, right? Like how can I really scale up my influence, scale up my healing? And I realized that, you know, in a clinic setting, I can see 20 patients in a day. I am physically and emotionally exhausted because a
Right.
lot, right? Imagine like speed dating, right? 20 speed dates in a row, and it's a life or death thing each time. So I loved it. It was great, but it kind of did leave me broken. But like, how can I share this with the world, right? How do I share my dharma? How do I, you know, how does my purpose in life become my purpose in life? And so, you know, that was really what drove me. And when you talk, you know, when I talk to people, because it's not a intuitive thing for a very, I don't want to break my arm here, patting myself on the back, but pretty successful cardiologist, right? Like leaving, right? Like,
No,
and
it's not. It's completely abnormal.
I've taken like a very significant pay cut. So I'd say, you know, first rule is make sure that you're financially going to be stable and your family can support and kind of all that
Right.
stuff. But people ask me, you know, isn't it, don't you feel scared or anything? And I said, you know what, I've never had so much peace because I'm really following what my soul is designed to do. And it's like this weird serenity. Like I can't explain it. Like, yeah, I should be terrified, right? Like, and I tell people, and anyone in the entrepreneur journey knows, you know, I kind of describe it sometimes as being on a roller coaster where you're not sure if you latched your safety belt or not, right? So
Yeah,
you're
that's like every day.
scary and thrilling, and you know, there's always a new twist or a turn or you know, whatever happens. But like at the end of the day, kind of choosing myself over society's expectations has put me in this really kind of Zen mode where I'm just like, you know what? I don't know how to do it yet, right? I'll figure it out, or I will hire somebody that can do this for me, or whatever. And so I think that problem, like just having the faith in yourself that you're going to figure this out, right, is a huge step. And I think that's what blocks a lot of people is they have a great idea and they say, oh yeah, you know, I have this new idea for this awesome software and you know, and it's going to change the world and we're going to connect, you know, unused cars to people that need rides and make this thing. And it seems crazy at first, you know, and they feel like they can't do it, but you know, it's not that you can, it's just that you're too afraid, right? And if you really kind of believe, then you just got to do it. Like there was no other choice for me. I think I'd be dead in my old practice right now from stress or whatever if I hadn't left. So it was one of the most healthy things that I've done for myself. And so much the better that now I'm able to kind of heal people at scale through diet and lifestyle, right? So it's really kind of, I didn't necessarily leave my core skill set of
Exactly.
I've just made it much more kind of available to a lot more people, right? So yeah, don't be afraid. And I mean, if it's really supposed to happen, make it happen. Like figure it out. Like you can do it. Like never in the history of the world has there been so much information like so readily available, right? Like on our
Yes.
phone, if you don't know how to do something, YouTube. I fixed my dryer the other day. Like figured out, you know, what's going on here. It's making this noise. And I took the thing apart. My wife was like, all right, she was calling Best Buy to buy a new dryer. I'm like, just give me 30 seconds here. And we got it to work
That's
because we
awesome.
watched a video, right? And so these things are available to us. You just got to have faith in yourself. And it is so empowering because so many of us for so long, particularly in the medical world, are just beaten down until we can't do it and whatever. In fact, when I left my practice, one of the administrators said, you'll be back in 2 years begging for your job. And I'm not sure if it'll be here or not.
Wow.
And I was just like, maybe. That's all I said was maybe. You know, I
Yeah.
didn't. But you know what? I feel much better about my existence now than I did before. So, yeah.
Sanjay, you are speaking my language. So, my whole thing, I have this theory called heart path, and it's how every piece of the puzzle along your life culminates to eventually get you into the right thing. You know, what is your dharma, your purpose? And but all the things mattered, right? All the good, all the bad, all the everything plays a part, plays a role in like the ultimate culmination. The funny thing, I have to mention this because you were talking about Ikigai. Way before I knew what Ikigai was, before it became popular in the United States, I was like, yeah, it's all about, purpose is what am I good at? What am I passionate about? And what is a need of the world, right? Those three things. I forgot about the part about getting paid.
Oh, and I think that's the most important part
Well,
when
it is, but I
you're with your
didn't.
parents, because otherwise you just have a hobby, right? Like,
I didn't know that back then, so I got myself into some bad financial trouble. Anyway, I had to mention that. Here's what I want to wrap up with. I think people will be absolutely delighted to have heard you and might be very, very interested in what you're up to now. So tell me what you are up to now, because I know that you have a brand spanking new podcast out and how people can get in touch with you or follow you online or wherever you want to send them online. Give us,
Absolutely.
yeah, like what's happening these days.
My podcast, so it's called The Curious Cardiologist. It's available on all the platforms, and we have it on YouTube. And the idea behind it is exploring new solutions to old problems, right? And so that doesn't necessarily mean more medicines, but what are the healing arts? Like we talked, my first guest, we talked about, is atherosclerosis heart disease an autoimmune condition?
Whoa.
So we think of it as cholesterol and all that stuff, which cholesterol has been around since the beginning of time. But there's actually signals that it could be your body attacking your blood vessels, and is that
Oh.
something like could it be infectious, right? And just we don't think about these things, right? And then thereafter, I've spoken to a couple of people that use like light therapy for vitamin D and emotional healing for somatic disorders. And so I learned that skin is the organ that centralizes shame. So if you have like shame or guilt, people get a lot of skin diseases. Heart is anger, right? So by working through these shames and anger triggers and all of this stuff, you can actually heal these physical symptoms. So it may not necessarily be you need medicines, but there's unresolved underlying issues. And so I love exploring these newer, well, I shouldn't say newer ideas, but novel ideas in the sense that we've forgotten about them, right? It's like my kids wearing my old concert t-shirts that I wore back in the 80s and 90s, because now it's new to like a Nirvana t-shirt is like new to them, right? Even though like that shirt is like 10 years older than 20 years older than they are. But these amazing ancient arts that have been abandoned that really I think do have a significant impact on our health. So that's the podcast. It's super fun. And I've got some really cool guests coming on the next couple months. So yeah, definitely check that out. And then in terms of what I'm doing now, is, as I mentioned several times, really changing the focus of my cardiovascular practice to focus on diet and lifestyle. I think all too often when you go to a doc and you ask them a pointed question, what should I eat? They'll just say, oh, just eat fruits and vegetables, and that's not necessarily the case, right? Or my father-in-law, who is floridly pre-diabetic, but believes his doctor much more than he believes his son-in-law. But that's a whole other episode of the that's a whole other therapy episode. His doctor said, eat less and exercise more. If you eat less and exercise more, you're actually putting your body in more stress and creating a bigger problem, right? So what I've done now is created a program called Well 12. It's a 12-week program where we use diet and lifestyle to optimize your health. So there's a foundational diet, reduces inflammation. And remarkably, what I found is 80 to 90% of the medical issues that people come to me with, be it thyroid, be it blood pressure, be it hormone imbalance, menopause symptoms, low testosterone, whatever, we get their symptoms better. I'm not saying I cure them, but we get a significant improvement in symptom scores with just the diet and lifestyle, learning how to do deep breathing techniques. I say you can't hack what you can't track. So everybody, it's a wearable device, and we teach you how to look at your sleep parameters, how to look at heart rate variability, all of these things to see how your body responds, getting that biofeedback, putting your body into a more relaxed, healing, repair state. And it's, the changes have been remarkable. I get goosebumps when I think about it, because for all the heart attacks that I've treated, probably thousands over my career, this is what I feel most impactful, where I had a gentleman who had been on insulin for 15 years, and through the lifestyle program in 8 weeks, we're able to get him off of his insulin.
Wow.
And he was like, Dr. B, I'm pissed. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, what happened? I thought something bad happened. He goes, why did you come up with this 18 years ago? I don't think I was even, like
Sorry.
he thinks I'm 12 years old. So I'm like, I don't think I was even born 12 years ago.
Right.
But seeing the impact, but getting back to what we were talking about before, returning agency back, and people are now aware of kind of they've linked now these diet changes and these lifestyle changes and mindset changes to improvements in their health, and to see them thrive, right? Like with any medication, you stop the medication and the effect goes away. So if you stop a GLP-1, we've seen data shows you gain the weight back, if not more, right?
Yeah.
You're lower muscle mass, and now you're pound for pound more fat than you were before. But what I love about this is teaching people lasting lifestyle habits. And I've had people 2 or 3 years out that have kept that weight off and improved their health, and remain off of their medications because now they know what they're supposed to feel like. It is empowering. So you can check that out at lagunalongevity.com. So LagunaLongevity.com. So you can sign up for a discovery call, or on Instagram or all socials. I'm at Dr. Sanjay MD. So we'll link it somewhere or whatever. But DrSanjayMD on all socials. But it's truly, my honor to be able to be this vessel of communication of this knowledge and wisdom, I guess. And it's not just me. I didn't create this myself, but being having the skills to communicate and to do things like this and to get people excited about their health again. But it's I think the most impactful thing is not just seeing like the people who do the program, but when I see their kids eating better. That happened with is that she and I did the program when I created it, and I lost a bunch of weight, as did she. But then my daughters started eating healthier, and try
That's
to
awesome.
get kids away from these fish, orange fish crackers and all these things. It's not an easy thing to do, and as a parent, you're just like, fine, whatever. But now to see them preferring red bell peppers, like they got mad at us that we bought red bell peppers and didn't tell them that they were in the fridge already pre-cut, and they're snacking healthier because that then heals the next generation, right? And
Totally.
it really kind of rings into eternity, and that's how the wedge of influence really grows, is then when the younger kids are eating better, they're making better eat decisions when they're off in college, and their kids do better. That's where the healing compounds itself. So it's been amazing, impactful for me.
And for all of the people that you are working with, helping, so awesome. I couldn't applaud you more. So for those of you watching and listening, all of the things that he just mentioned will be linked at lucra.com. You can just find this post, and we will be so excited for you to reach out to him, see how he can help you or just learn from him. Dr. Sanjay, this has been an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for your time and energy today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love it. Love it.